a movie trailer that had a fake emergency alert tone, and the FCC didn't take kindly to that. This person writes in, I just finished listening to your latest off-the-hook broadcast where you talked to me about the emergency alert system, and as someone with an intimate knowledge of the system and its history, I thought I could impart some info. Unfortunately, I'm on the West Coast, where a trip to New York City for HOPE has never been an option for me, but maybe someday I'll be able to come out and give a talk on the subject. We'd certainly like to hear more on this because it's fascinating to us. In the beginning, 1951, that's when the beginning was, there was CONELRAD, C-O-N-E-L-R-A-D. There was an alert system that utilized key stations. They would receive a message from the federal government. Then to send the alert, they would turn off their AM carrier for 5 seconds. Then they turn on for 5 seconds, off for 5 seconds, back on, broadcasting a 960 hertz tone for 15 seconds, followed by the emergency message. Stations down the line would have systems in place to detect the carrier off, on, and then notify the station that there was an alert. Now, Bernie, maybe you remember what the frequencies were of CONELRAD stations. Do you?
Well, I'm reading his email, so I would be cheating. You mean the radio frequencies?
The actual radio frequencies. There are two frequencies. In fact, if you look on old radio dials...
I was going to say, if you go to a flea market and you find an old AM radio from the 50s, or soon, or maybe between the sometime in the 50s until the early 60s, there's a little on the radio dial, and radios had like a dial or a sort of a band span thing. There was a little symbol indicating that's where you tune when there was a huge emergency, but I don't recall the frequencies, do you?
Well, in the time that you said all that, I clicked on the Wikipedia link, and I'm currently trying to figure out what the frequencies are right now. But
okay, well, I'm going to have to ask you to hold that thought and that Wikipedia link, because it's at the top of the hour. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM New York, and you are not listening to the Personal Computer Show. They're off today. You are listening to Off the Hook, extending into a second hour. But we are going to take a very short break, and we will be right back after this piece of very interesting music that I think you'll enjoy, with more information about the emergency alert system.
Click on help. Call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help. Call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help. Call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help. Call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. I'm not your damn personal IT guy. I get no peace, but at least now I see why you ask me about computers. Apparently I'm the only person who knows how to turn the damn things on. Oh look, you can't configure your Outlook again. Well, maybe you should write the settings down, my friend. But that might require a little effort from you. And Mr. Big Shot has more important things to do. It's fine if I have to explain it one time, but we're at number 29 and I'm losing my mind. So I'll just drop everything, deadlines be damned, and explain again, although I know you'll never understand. Close all of those windows, let's begin. Click on this, click on that, now put your password in. See, you don't need to be a total whiz. No, I don't know what your password is. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Why are your problems automatically mine? No, it's fine, I'm nothing better to do with my time. But it's not like I ask you every day for help when I make a dookie and I can't wipe myself. So what were you trying to do when the error appeared? Then I curse cause it's even worse than I feared. I see your PC is an ancient jalopy, and you're trying to copy a DVD onto a floppy. First of all, where'd you even get a floppy disk? Cause really, I didn't think those things still exist. Secondly, I don't want to be a spoil sport, but that's an Ethernet cable, that's a USB port. If you buy something new and don't know how to hook it up, it doesn't make you less of a man to look it up. You claim you're not an idiot, well prove me wrong, and stop giving me more material for this song. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else. Or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself.
Hello?
Hey, Tom, can I see you for a sec? I'm trying to get my iPhone to sync with my home computer over the VPN.
I'm sorry, I'm unable to take your... your call at the moment, but if you leave your name and number, I'll get right back to you. Beep.
It happens every day, and I can't get away, because they follow me around like a dog who wants to play. I know when my phone rings, my day will be wrecked. When my boss says,
Tom, can I see you for a sec?
A second rapidly becomes an hour and a half. I would laugh, but I'm not part of the IT staff, so I don't know what I'm doing. I just click around and curse and pray to various gods that I don't make the problem worse. Funny how I said before this day was gonna drag. Now I'm working quick, because his cologne is making me gag. He says I have to fix it, and I can't wait till later, and somehow it's my fault he never backed up his data. There's still a couple quirks, and it's making me berserker. Damn it, Jim, I'm a Mac, not a miracle worker. And when I finally fix every problem he ever had, my uncle calls asking about his son's leak pad.
Click on help, call someone else, or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else, or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else, or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself. Click on help, call someone else, or figure out how to freaking Google it yourself.
And that was I'm Not Your Personal IT Guy by Devo Spice. You can hear more of his work at devospice.com. That's DevoSpice.com.
Great song.
There we are. So, Emmanuel, you back?
I'm back, but not for very long because my phone's about to die. Bernie, do you have the article I was reading in front of you?
Well, no, I wouldn't know what article you're reading, but I don't have it.
Article. I'm sorry.
The listener email.
Oh, the email. Yes, I do have that.
Yes. There's some interesting stuff ahead in that, including some information on a telephone network, which I'm very interested in. But my phone, I'm surprised I haven't died already. I'm down to the last possible bar, and plus it's cost me a fortune. So I'm going to let you guys go and have fun. And I know you have a special guest coming up as well, and maybe some phone calls.
We do. Well, thank you very much for joining us from Germany and going to the trouble. And we hope you have some suitably exciting adventures to tell us about next week. Okay.
Did the phone die before he could say?
The phone, either the phone died or he just got disgusted and hung up on us.
A common response to us, but I don't know if we're on next week, but we will find that out, and Emmanuel will be with us the next time we're on, whatever week that is.
Yes, we're on either next week or the week after, and we're preempted for the other, but we'll figure it out, and we'll post about it and all that good sort of stuff.
Hey, Rob.
Yes, Bernie.
Do we have room for some more stories before new stories before we bring on our guest tonight?
Yes, indeed. We have about another 20 minutes until we bring our guest on. So there's a lot of other stuff going on. What did you have in mind, Bernie?
I saw a pretty interesting article in Wireless Week about police employing a new mobile app to catch riot instigators. And basically, this is which police department this was. Was it in Boston? I'll find it here. Los Angeles.
It's the police department with no regards for civil liberties. That narrows it down
a bit. Yeah. Well, that doesn't narrow it down very much, does it, Mike?
Not all that much. No. But
in Los Angeles, they're talking about a party in Southern California where there was a lot of overzealous reveling. So what the police did is the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. They came up with this idea to produce. I'm sure they paid some company to develop it called LEDIR, LEEDIR, the Large Emergency Event Digital Information Repository, and it's a crowdsourcing app where individuals can have the sheriff's department app on their smartphone, and whenever they see somebody doing something wrong, they can just point the camera from their smartphone at the wrongdoer, which will then record the caller's, the person's phone information, who's sending the picture, and send the picture and the geographic coordinates of where the thing went on, and then you can send a text along with that to indicate what's going on and so forth. So it's kind of like a mobile snitch app. So I'm wondering how common this is going to be in the future, where maybe we'd be required to have a mobile snitch app on all our phones, to turn anybody in that we see it. Or maybe the phone's cameras will just be activated all the time, and whether we like it or not, the phones will be snitching on us. Oh, wait a second. They're doing that already, aren't they?
Quite so. You know, I've got an app on my phone called Stop and Frisk Watch, which is actually works in the other direction and records authority figures who are in the process of arresting you or doing something else that you want to document. But, yeah, I guess the bad guys can get hold of smartphone technology too, but all in all, it's not getting any less weird out there. Speaking of which, we've been handed a piece of paper by someone here at the station, which I get to now read to you and say this just in because I've always wanted to be that guy. The Conrad frequencies that you guys were talking about earlier, I've been told they are 640 and 1240 kilohertz. So
it sounds right.
Yeah, it sounds right to me, and yeah, interesting stuff.
Now, I'm really curious how the stations did that back then, because the stations really weren't equipped to transmit on, you know, their transmitter was designed for one frequency, and their antenna was resonant for a certain frequency. So I don't know whether they had to have antenna tuners when an emergency came, they'd have to switch to that frequency. There weren't a whole bunch of stations just lying around waiting to broadcast on that frequency when something happened. And AM stations didn't necessarily cover. It may be that there were a few stations that were could just have really high power levels, and you could hear them from, you know, several cities away when there was an emergency. But now we have the emergency alert system, which doesn't even doesn't rely on radio necessarily. It works over cable TV and satellite TV and smartphones and dumb phones, and we all know about the emergencies, and the president can, on his authority, make us all aware of anything through any of those mediums.
It's an interesting thing to think about, and yeah. So, with all this going on, there's a lot of other stuff that we need to keep just as close an eye on. The FCC is in the news this past week.
Oh, good.
Yeah, our old pals. There's a crowd out in front of the FCC as we speak that have been camping there for the past week. They've been occupying the FCC, which is a thing called appropriately enough Occupy the FCC, which has a website at occupythefcc.com. This is being done by the group Fight for the Future, which is an internet rights protection group. Which fought things like SOPA and CISPA and continues to do so. And tonight is their final planned night of camping and protesting out in front of the FCC headquarters in Washington, D.C. 24/7, because tomorrow is when the FCC makes their announcement of what they're going to do with the proposed new rules that that deeply affect net neutrality. So if you're in the D.C. area, you want to go hang out with them, you can meet them tonight at the FCC headquarters. Or if you'd like to do that, the information is at occupythefcc.com.
I've spoken over the past week with some people who have been talking to congressmen and congresswomen, maybe, and FCC officials. And if you remember when we reported a couple of weeks ago that the net neutrality was being essentially killed, I was pretty pessimistic that this could be stopped, but there is some cause for optimism. Maybe it won't get as bad as we feared right away. So I would encourage people who are also optimistic to go on the FCC, and they have this awful website, but you can try and navigate it to find the official place to leave a comment on this proposal. And apparently they've been getting comments in such numbers that there are rumors they will delay the announcement of the final rules or even change the final rules to be a bit more friendly to normal people and not just to, you know, Comcast and Verizon.
Yeah, there's an interesting post on the official FCC blog on FCC.gov, and I have it in front of me now. This is written by the FCC commissioner last week, someone by the name of Mignon Clyburn. Mignon like the filet, Clyburn like the Clyburn. This post says, over 100,000 Americans have spoken, and during the past few weeks, tens of thousands of consumers, companies, entrepreneurs, investors, schools, educators, healthcare providers, and others have reached out to ask me to keep the Internet free and open. While the calls, emails, and letters are new, my commitment to Internet freedom is not. In fact, my public efforts to preserve a free and open Internet began many years ago, and this person goes on and on to to basically give some career highlights. And in January, the D.C. Circuit disagreed with the FCC's legal approach concerning the no-blocking and non-discrimination rules and remanded the issue to this agency. Unlike many, I actually see this remand as a unique opportunity for us to take a fresh look and evaluate our policy in light of the many developments that have occurred over the last 4 years. There is no doubt that preserving and maintaining a free and open internet is fundamental to the core values of our democratic society, and I have an unwavering commitment to its independence. My mind remains open as I continue to evaluate how best to promote these fundamental core values. Over 100,000 Americans and counting, I am listening to your voices as I approach this critical vote to preserve an ever free and open internet. And that from the commissioner of the FCC. It sounds like hopeful words, but it sounds like politics. So I'm not sure how cheered up to be by this.
Just to be clear, Rob, there are five people that have the title commissioner, so it is not the commissioner. It is one of the commissioners, and this is the viewpoint that has thus far been in a minority amongst those five. But maybe something will change.
Well, this is the FCC commissioner who is called Mignon. I don't know. What do you think about this, Bernie?
I'm really still confused by this net neutrality or this new initiative by the chairperson of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, who used to work for a cable industry lobby, and before that for the cellular telephone industry. It's the whole revolving door thing, you know. I'm a little confused about how he expects to, he wants to roll out a system where the ISPs, whether it's a Time Warner, Comcast, Verizon, whatever, or other internet service providers, where they can provide a so-called fast lane for content providers that pay extra money to the ISP. He wants to make that okay, but he says that this will not degrade or affect the service, the bandwidth available to content providers that do not pay like a protection racket fee to these ISPs. But there's a finite amount of bandwidth that all these ISPs have. So how could you provide more bandwidth to some content providers without it affecting the remaining bandwidth to others? This just seems illogical to me.
I think the answer to your question is that it's impossible. And I mean, the way that you create a so-called fast lane. So first of all, as a consumer, you're paying already for like some amount of bandwidth, and you're getting much less than that. And I guess part of the fast lane proposal is maybe certain content providers would be privileged to actually fill up your bandwidth. But it is not, according to some people, an accident that you're not getting the speeds. There was a fascinating blog post published within the last week by this company called Level 3. Level 3 is one of the largest sort of backbone internet providers in the world, if not the largest. And so what that means is, you know, if you have a server in Texas and I'm want to look at your content in here in New York, maybe Level 3 or their competitors will be the one to sort of get that data across the country from your server network to the to your consumer broadband provider network. And they published some graphs of usage of their sort of interconnects. So the way they work is they connect to your server operator's network, they connect to your cable provider's network, they connect to a whole bunch of networks. That's what they do. And there's each of those links has a fixed capacity, and normally what most people do is when those links are full, the two sides, both Level 3 and the entity they peer with, will, you know, sort of share the cost to upgrade the link so that their mutual customers can exchange as much traffic as they want. But they produce some graphs that show some very full links that are not being upgraded because the entities they peer with are refusing to pay the cost of the upgrades, so thus degrading the performance for their customers. And Level 3 is very careful not to say directly who the people who are doing this are. They just say there's like five of them in the United States and one in Europe. But they also say that these are some of the, you know, companies that are most hated, basically, in the United States. And they give, you know, some further descriptions. So the company is clearly Comcast and Verizon and those sorts of entities, the large, mass market broadband providers that are precisely the ones who are pushing for an end to net neutrality. They are already not upgrading their networks to give you the service that you pay for. And so, of course, they're going to just continue to do that even more if they have the right to this so-called fast lane thing.
Yeah, it sounds about right for the telecom industry. Meanwhile, the FCC is considering treating cable companies like utilities, in that they'll give them the sort of common carrier status. I have a story here from The Guardian, in a live chat on Twitter, because that's a thing that the FCC does apparently. The FCC senior counsel Gigi Sohn. The FCC Senior Counsel for External Affairs said that the regulator's open internet proposals to be published on Thursday, meaning tomorrow, will seek comment on whether broadband internet access should be treated in the same way as electricity, telephone calls, or water, where consumers have equal access to the same service. The FCC has faced a mounting backlash from consumer groups and tech firms after Chairman Tom Wheeler, him again, appeared to signal he was preparing to formalize the creation of a quote-unquote fast lane internet for those able to pay for it. Wheeler has denied that that's his intention, but critics charge that he has signaled the end to net neutrality. And, of course, that's what we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks now. Common carrier regulations, as you may know, cover telephone communications and require companies to offer the same service to everyone. But in 2002, the FCC reclassified broadband as an information service, not a telecommunications service, which paved the way for a decade of legal battles and basically led us to the mess that we're in now.
That's right. Hey, Rob, it's just a coincidence, maybe, but back in 2002, it was President George W. Bush, and the chairman of the FCC was none other than Michael Powell. That name Powell may ring a bell because he was the son of General Colin Powell.
Colin Powell, yeah.
Who was appointed by President Bush as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or one. He was up there in their military, top, you know, big brass. But anyway, Michael Powell is notorious for having just really eviscerated a lot of public interest protections that the FCC had put down for decades when it came to communications, both broadcast and telecommunication, other, you know, communications. So that's why we are in this mess we are today, why we don't have net neutrality, because 12 years ago, ISPs were regulated as common carriers. Now there's no regulation of them. They can do whatever the hell they want, and that's why we're in this mess today.
Yeah, it turns out when given the freedom to do everything they can to scrape money out of people, they'll do everything they can to scrape money out of people. That's why they exist.
That's the market, the magic of the marketplace.
Yeah. I mean, but so I'm not a huge believer in markets, maybe, but there are countries, the United Kingdom, France are among them, where they actually have a market in broadband. And so the entity that owns the last mile is not the entity that actually provides you internet service. And so there is a market, and there's more than one player in the market, and this creates competition and lowers prices and increases quality. We don't have that in the United States. We have monopolies, and that is not a market. So as a consumer, I cannot go to a different cable company and say, you know, I hear you offer better internet. So, of course, you know, this is like Econ 1. If you believe Econ 1, it predicts exactly what we're getting, and we're getting it.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Let's see. The chairman, Wheeler, has always been clear that this option that they have, which is known as Title II, is a viable option. But reclassifying broadband under Title II will inevitably lead to further legal battles with cable firms. Now, what this means, let me find it in the post here. And I just lost my place.
I mean, what Title II common carrier status means, yes, is it's like a telephone network. If you place a call on the telephone network, your company is required to interconnect with the recipient's telephone company and just, you know, send your call on through without, you know, listening in to see if you're saying something you shouldn't be saying, that they'll, you know, degrade the quality if you're criticizing the company. That's not allowed for a telephone company, and my view is it shouldn't be allowed for an internet company, but apparently that's very controversial at the FCC.
Right. Imagine if you're a phone provider, imagine if you could only call people on that same provider. because all the companies were not instructed by on high to play nice with each other, basically, and give everyone the same service, no matter what. Imagine if your internet connection could only connect you to people who hosted their content on the same company, and that's the sort of mess that we would be in. I think eventually, or there would be premiums on stuff depending on where it comes from, and that's the wrong way to do it, because people who have their content on the internet, as we've explained before, have already paid the money to get that content on there, and what they're trying to do now is double dip and charge you for receiving that same content that someone's already paid to push to you. So, yeah, net neutrality is important stuff, and I think it's about time. I'm going to try to get our next guest on the phone, Mike and Bernie, if you wanna talk a bit more about this story or whatever. Or what else is going on?
I like a couple of quotes I'm reading in this article. An outfit called Broadband for America. They're a lobby group for cable companies, like the similar to where our current FCC commissioner Tom Wheeler used to work for an organization like that. Tweeted that Title II will impede investment. Ostensibly in ISPs. Well, sure. Right now, ISPs have almost unlimited profits, billions and billions of dollars. And if they could only make a few billion instead of like many, many, many more billion, there might be a little bit less investment because that's just how economics works. But I'm sure they'd be able to turn a fair profit.
We seem to have lost you, Bernie. Are you still there? See, Bernie is talking to us over the internet, which does not offer service guarantees, and I don't think it was intentional in this case that his call seems to have disappeared. But this is it could be intentional in the future if we lose net neutrality, if the broadband providers have their way.
Bernie, is that you? Are you back?
Oh, I'm sorry, I lost my connection.
Okay, well, you were saying.
Oh, I was. Did anyone hear the Bernie Sanders quote I read, or was I cut off before that?
We did not hear from Bernie Sanders, which is always a shame.
Yeah, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, I believe. He tweeted, "We must not let corporations turn profits by putting a price tag on the free flow of ideas." That's a kind of a flowery way of saying it, but I like that. Did the folks hear what the cable company lobby group was saying, that Title II will impede investment?
Yeah, we did hear that.
Okay.
Well done, Bernie. Well, you got the cable company's point of view through, but not Bernie
Sanders.
Well,
yeah, but I was explaining what they mean. There's going to be – of course there will be a little bit less investment if the profits are not insanely huge. If they can't – you know, if they can only make $5 billion instead of $10 billion this year, yeah, there's going to be less investment. But so what? That's okay.
It's not clear to me, actually, Bernie, that is true, because right now they just make profits, and if you can make profits without making investments, that's always better than spending some of your profits on upgrading your networks, as you might be forced to do if you have a competitor.
Oh, I was referring to shareholder investments. I was referring to people who buy stock in these companies, which is, you know, these companies are required to serve their because they're corporations, they are required by law to serve their shareholders first and make money. They're legally required to do that. That is our system. They're required to serve their shareholders' interests more than their customers' interests. That's our system of economics.
And some of the companies are quite good at that.
Yeah. So, Rob, how are we making out with getting this guest on the line?
Rob is very busy dialing. I don't know if he can talk and dial at the same time.
Okay, sorry.
It's a possibility. I'm still working to get our guest, but shouldn't be a moment.
We're in suspense here.
I'm in suspense. This is a very this is a very crucial thing. It really, I think, affects the future of the internet in this country, and unfortunately, so much of the internet throughout the world is currently run through the United States. That it really affects the future of the internet in the world. Other countries will, of course, try and copy the U.S. model. If the U.S. comes up with something particularly bad, I'm sure other countries will be, other cable companies throughout the world will be jealous of the profits that American companies are able to make. So I hope that people will write to the FCC and write to their congresspeople, and maybe we can make a difference.
It's possible. And our next guest may be the sort of person to talk to about this sort of thing. We have on the line Sandra Ordonez from the Open Internet Tools Project. Sandra, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Very, very good. Thank you for joining us. So Sandy's with OpenITP. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what that what your organization does?
Sure. So we support the community behind anti-surveillance and anti-censorship tools, which are also known as circumvention tools. And those are things like Tor and CryptoCat. Those seem to be the most well-known.
Yes, indeed. And so how do you go about spreading this sort of thing?
Sure. So our organization supports the community in many ways. We offer grants, we organize hackathons, and we also organize events like Techno-Activism Third Mondays. Even though it is a community-run event, we've been really an intrinsic piece of helping organize that initiative. And basically what it is it's monthly meetups that happen in 21 cities throughout the world. And they bring together people that are interested in surveillance and censorship, but most importantly, they allow the developers of these tools to actually meet people that are either using these tools or are interested in helping develop these tools and kind of give input, not from the technological part, but more from the front end, like why they had difficulty downloading it or why they can't seem to use it. And that cross-pollination of individuals is really, really important. So Techno-Activism Third Mondays really focuses on bringing everyone to the table because these are issues that really affect everyone. And until we're having, you know, a diverse conversation with everyone, things are really not going to change. Because the geeks know how to protect, you know, their privacy. People that are not as technically savvy really don't. So it's really important to cultivate that conversation, you know, across many fields and, you know, many ages and, you know, many interests. So that's what we try and do with Techno-Activism Third Mondays.
Right, and that's always been something that's been very necessary, I think, in the field of, like, circumvention software or technology, where the sort of people who make that sort of thing can easily use it, but it's still not something that just anybody could start up and run easily without being an expert. So so what you do is try and work with the people who make the software and the people who use the software and try and form that connection between the product and the user where it's actually something that people could run or people could make use of.
And also what we've seen in the last year, obviously, well, I'd probably say a year and a half, obviously because of you know, what's come out in the news, you know, there's a lot of people that didn't think about these issues beforehand, and now they are thinking about these issues. So it also provides a forum so people that are kind of experts in security and privacy, that they have a platform so that they can talk to the general public and help them understand how they're being affected, you know, what they need to look out for, how they can protect themselves. This coming Monday in New York, for example, we're going to have an event called Data Valence and Everyday Consciousness in the Smart City. And the person who is presenting, his name is Gregory Donovan. He's the founder of OpenCUNY. And through the presentation, what he's going to talk about is how people that live in cities are being surveilled on a constant basis, and they're not even aware, right? Mm-hmm. Because by nature, when you're in a city, you're actually surrounded by a lot of surveillance technologies, you know? Mm-hmm. And things like your phone, right? Like your phone actually allow many people to know where you are all the time. Sometimes people, you don't really want them to know, you know, where you are.
Right.
So he's going to be talking about that and, you know, talking about it from a point of view so that, like, a normal person, like, I say normal, a non-technical person can come and really have a basic understanding of how their privacy is affected within a city environment.
Right, and that's certainly something that that's a mission that we could take to heart here on this station and on this program. Of course, we still need you to support us, 212-209-2950, or give the numeral to WBAI.org to keep us on the air. But so So what sort of things, like, you say techno-activism third Mondays. Now, they're called that because they're on the third Monday of every month, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And again, they happen in 21 cities throughout the world. And if there is not a instance or like a meetup in your part of the world, you definitely can reach out to us and we can help you start one. We have a very collaborative style. So, we really support community. So if you're interested in starting one in your city, like, not only will we help you, but we also allow you to kind of get really involved with the process of kind of fleshing out TA3M, we call it TA3M for short, from the very beginning. So it's a really, I come from open source, so I can say this. Some tech environments can be very harsh. We really try and create an environment where it's fun for organizers, it's fun for the people that are volunteering, and we really look at diversity. I am a Latina, I grew up in New York City, and so I'm really conscientious of that because we want to make sure that everyone feels, welcomed and, safe to talk and be themselves. So that's also like a big thing for us, and it's been working out really well.
Absolutely. We try and foster the same sort of environment at Hope where everyone, no matter what their level of expertise, can get together and learn things and share what they know and commiserate. So what's I hear a lot about the work you guys do on all levels, from like small local things to sort of internationally reaching things. Can you give us some more examples of the sort of things that that your organization does?
Yeah, sure. So recently there was an event in San Francisco called RightsCon, and we hosted what we call the UX Hackathon, or UX Sprint, I should say. And so what it was a space where, projects, these tools, could go and meet with UX experts as well as, people that use these tools and kind of get an idea of what was working and not working. And through the UX Sprint, a lot of tools were able to they had an aha moment. They're like, oh, I get it. This makes sense because I'm technical. And of course, like, this process makes sense for me, but this sense doesn't make sense for you because you don't know like what SQL is or whatever. So it was a really, really successful event. There's a lady that works in my office. Her name is Gus Andrews. She's actually really involved with Hope.
She actually used to be part of this show at one point.
Yes, of course. And she's gonna have like a UX UX kind of table at Hope. So people, if they want to help and they want to contribute, if you don't really want to volunteer and spend a lot of hours, if you are going to be at Hope, the least you could do is just spend 5 minutes kind of playing with the tools and giving us feedback on what's working and what's not working. So I really encourage people that are going to be at Hope to stop by the Noisy Square. It's going to be housed at the Noisy Square table. And again, her name is Gus Andrews. Yes, she's part of the show. So I really encourage you guys to reach out and give your input.
I should point out, for those who don't recognize the acronym, UX is user experience. It's what happens when somebody sits down in front of software or something else and has to make use of it. So working on the UX end of things is something that's often neglected when in a world of just hardcore programmers and coders and geeks, whereas it's the most important thing for anyone else who's going to sit down in front of the thing and try and get the benefit of it. So it's definitely important. It's definitely so you guys are coming to Hope, and we definitely look forward to seeing you there. Have you been to Hope in the past or?
No, it will be my first time, so I'm quite excited.
Excellent. Well, welcome ahead of time. Bernie, what do you think?
I think this is great. This is a good example of the kind of material and things you can learn coming to HOPE, which stands for Hackers on Planet Earth, which is this July 18th through 20th at the Hotel Pennsylvania. And for more information about this conference, you can go to hope.net and read a whole lot about it. You can still register for tickets. It's, as Emmanuel noted earlier, it's still not too late to submit a talk If you just go to the website and click on speakers, you can learn more about how to submit a talk. It's a little bit late in the game, but we're still considering submissions or a workshop or a project. Anything you want to submit, we will try to find room to host it, because this is an amazing educational conference with like 100 speakers, dozens of workshops, projects, and music and art and just amazingness for 3 days.
Yep. Excellent. So, Sandra, where can people go to get more info about OpenITP and your events and so on?
Well, for techno-activism Third Mondays, they should visit ta3m.net. And if they're interested in OpenITP work, openitp.org. So those are the two websites, ta3m.net and openitp.org.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. We're probably going to move on and read some more listener mail and possibly take phone calls if we have time. You're welcome to stick around for that if you like, Sandra, or we can say goodbye to you now. But yeah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys at Hope, and really good job. I really hope you guys get a lot of donations tonight, because you guys do a phenomenal job, and I'm really happy you guys are on the air.
Thank you very much, Sandra Ordonez from OpenITP, the Open Internet Tools Project.
Of course, if you'd like to make Sandra happy, as well as making us happy and making yourself happy by keeping this program and this station on the air, the number 212-209-2950, or the website give2wbai.org, and of course, that is the digit 2 rather than the word.
Okay, excellent. Okay, another couple of listener emails that we've gotten. Max writes, is it known what Jim Vicenza's new address is? We spoke a couple of weeks ago about our colleague Jim, who was on the show in the past and suffered from a stroke. He also suffered a heart attack in January, and he was in the hospital for that. But as soon as we gave out the address for his hospital room for people to send him well wishes, he immediately left the hospital. Because he's a slippery character, is our Jim. But yes, Jim is now at an assisted living facility, and we have permission to give out the address. It is Madison York Assisted Living, attention Jim Vicench, V-I-C-H-E-N-C-H, room 810. That's room 810, 6180 Woodhaven Boulevard, Flushing, New York, 11374. And
Jim is probably listening right now.
He probably is. Hello, Jim. Always good to...
Hey, Jim.
Always good to talk to him. And he was actually at the 2600 meeting a couple of weeks ago and looking very fit for someone who suffered a stroke and then a heart attack. And, he is tough. And, any well wishes or things like that you want to send him, that is the address. If you missed it, you can get the MP3 later, or you can write down right now really quickly, Madison York Assisted Living, attention Jim Vicench, room 810, 6180 Woodhaven Boulevard, Flushing, New York, 11374. Another email we got. Trent writes, hey Bernie S., what was the name of that remote application you mentioned you had installed on your BlackBerry? It sounded like Lucid Live Light.
It's Lucy, L-U-C-I, Live Light. There's a Lucy Live, which is like a $300 app, but the Lucy Live Lite is the surprisingly light version, which is $30, and it's a pretty good client. It runs on not only the BlackBerry 10 operating system, but iOS, for iPhones and iPods and iPads, and it runs on Windows and Linux and Mac OS. It runs on virtually any platform you're likely to run across, and enables you connect with a device called a Comrex BrickLink, which is sitting probably right in front of you at the studio, and provides a pretty decent quality audio connection between any mobile device or computer and our studio. So we're glad to have it, and we hope to use it more in the future.
Oh, that's what that is. I've had my feet up on it. I thought it was a stool. I'll brush that off later. So I'm thinking maybe we have a little bit of time left in our double length episode. Maybe it might be an idea to take a couple of phone calls, not just to our pledge line at 212-209-2950, although those are the important phone calls that keep us alive and on the air, but maybe some listener phone calls to our regular call-in line, 212-209-2900. And you know, tell us what's on your mind, tell us what, ask us questions, and that sort of thing. I'm not seeing any phone lines light up yet.
But, while we wait for those calls to come in, one story that did cross my attention this week, Chelsea Manning, who of course leaked all those documents to WikiLeaks and was formerly known as Bradley Manning, there was this bizarre story in the AP that was leaked that she is going to be transferred to a federal prison rather than a federal military prison where she would be able to get hormone treatment for gender change or sex change. And then her lawyer, David Coombs, posted this morning that the first he learned of this was from the AP story and that this is not actually what he and Chelsea were asking for. They were asking for treatment within the military system. So it's a bit of a strange story and one that we will continue to follow. Still up in the air at the moment as to what will happen.
Okay, we've got a couple of phone calls coming in. Let's see how good a decision this is. Try this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just want to say one thing. I know last week you were complaining about not being able to get through to that premium line.
Yes, indeed.
And I think you said, somebody there said they called and, you know, 20 rings, they finally got through. Actually, there is a better number to call. I don't know why they don't give this one out. I know there's the promo that Reggie Johnson does, and he gives out that number.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried it 20 times and gave up, so I didn't think anybody answered it at all. But there is a better number where they answer.
What is it?
After four or five rings. It's 347-529-6664. Mm-hmm. 347-529-6664, and they have a machine there, and they pick up after four or five rings, and you give them your information, and they call you back. So I don't know. I don't.
The
FBI is a little understaffed now. So
we like phone numbers here on Off the Hook. So thank you very much for giving us that information.
Okay,
and
good luck.
We encourage people who need it to make use of it. Let's see who else is out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey there. I wanted to ask you guys if you saw the NSA special on WGBH Frontline last night.
I did.
See it. Bernie, how was it?
Yeah, it was a PBS Frontline. It wasn't just on WGBS. It was on all the most of the PBS affiliates, PBS Frontline. It's a pretty good investigative journalism TV show that's been around for like 20 years. But it was, I think it was called Nation of Secrets or something along those lines. It was a two-hour special about the whole history of this recent NSA skullduggery over the past 10 years or so. And it was fascinating. I don't think I learned much from a technical standpoint about the programs that were happening, but it was interesting to hear about all the political stuff that was going on as far as how the Bush administration really strong-armed and pressured the New York Times to prevent them from reporting about the mass warrantless wiretapping of American citizens until after the 2004 election. I thought that was interesting.
Complied to, right?
I'm sorry?
Which they dutifully complied with.
Yes, the Times did, which is actually an interesting reason that is the reason that Ed Snowden, who had a very dim view of the Times for having buckled down to the White House keeping this a secret, he didn't release his all these leaked documents, Ed Snowden, to the Times. He went to other news journalism outlets. So I hope that is a lesson to the Times and any other news organization that would believe the lies from the White House or any other government agent saying, oh, it'll destroy the world. Blood will be on your hands if you report this story. Which is exactly what they were told.
David Addington is the critical guy. He's still out there, and he's really kind of a war criminal and should be charged as such. Beyond that, I just wanted to say that the precedent of the Times not reporting a story involving NSA is also related to the Ron Pelton story, P-E-L-T-O-N. And Ron Pelton was an NSA employee who went to the Soviets in 1984 and discussed a program called Ivy Bells. And Ivy Bells was the underwater cable tapping device that the NSA had produced to tap Soviet cables that carried military traffic. And for a long time, the New York Times sat on that story. And in fact, Casey, who was then the head of the CIA, came and threatened the New York Times with closure and told them that if they published this story, it would do grave damage to the national security of the United States and all that. And in fact, the New York Times did, after a while, after a slight embargo, they did go ahead and publish that. And that cable tapping device is on display in Moscow.
Fascinating.
So you can go and have a look at the thing. And in fact, the James E. Carter submarine, which is one of the latest to join the fleet, I think in 2010 or 11, has a special pod that was built in. It's sort of like a stretch aircraft. What they did was they built most of the submarine in Groton, Connecticut, and then they brought in this special NSA additional pod, which was installed between the hull sections to expand the overall length of the submarine. And that pod has a very special application for getting into fiber optics on the bottom of the ocean and having man-workable access to the cables to tap these things. So I urge people to pay a lot of attention to this, because this undersea undersea cable tapping is a present and future thing to stay abreast of.
It's definitely worth keeping an eye on. And
watch the next one, which comes up next Tuesday, is the second part of this series, and it's
right Tuesday
well
at 9 o'clock, I believe.
That's correct.
Right, and PBS, I believe, puts their programs up on the web for viewing as well on their website. So
I think they do. So you can online viewing is going back and see what they were talking about. I think it was a very good presentation. I'm amazed that they got Michael Hayden to talk and say what he did. And also, you know, Tom Drake and Bill Binney, these guys are famous. You know,
yeah, Bill Binney was one of our keynote speakers at the most recent HOPE conference.
Indeed.
That's fantastic. And I hope he talked about, you know, the Stellar Wind and Thin Thread, which they talked about, and some of these programs, which, you know, have a direct and very, very clear connection to what Ed Snowden was releasing. So
excellent.
It's all very good, and it really does, you know, if you talk about the open Internet, this is what has to be endorsed, and strong encryption has to be endorsed.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to watch the NSA, because they lie through their teeth, and then they lie through their teeth again.
You're kidding.
And it goes back to 75 in the Church Committee hearings, and that's really the original, you know, lying that they did in the breaking of the Constitution that they did back then, which formed in 1978, the FISA and the FISC. They were directly formed because of those, you know, overturns of information.
Yeah,
right,
it's amazing.
Which they have since co-opted completely at this point, it seems.
That's correct. Yeah. They were actually discussing, and Mr. Greenwald in his new book discusses the fact that the FISC actually gave blanket authority, apparently on a judge's discretion, to eavesdrop on countries. And they were doing that at the UN to serve Susan Rice's appetite for advanced information on a particular charter vote that was coming up in the UN, and four of the countries that were not covered by NSA surveillance were actually brought in through the FISC, and that is a total abrogation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Indeed.
Well, then one of the judges signed a general warrant to authorize the warrantless wire, a general warrant to authorize mass wiretapping of Americans. So it's like the court serves no purpose other than just to rubber stamp. They've almost never said no to any request.
Right. Okay. Well, caller, thank you. Thank you very much for your call. We're going to move on, but thank you for calling. Okay. Let's see who else is out there. Good evening. You're not on off the hook. Good evening. You're on off the hook.
Hi there. I'm an old-time broadcaster, and before I was screaming at my radio 640 and 1240 regarding the old Conelrad system, and I wanted to explain to you, I know this is trivial compared to the last caller, which was excellent, by the way, but the old Conelrad system used to work by having area AM broadcasters actually swap out coils in their transmitters. So
thank
they
you.
Would load into one of those frequencies. And
thank
fear,
I wondered how they did that. That answers my question.
The fear was at the time that domestic AM radio stations would be used in the same way they used to guide airplanes, which would be to actually track to the radio station in order to deliver their bombs. So what they had was that five-second thing that you used to mention used to not only be the code that would trigger the system, but the stations that were assigned would actually switch transmitters on and off so that they would provide a continuous signal to the listener, but in fact they would be coming from different directions every 5 seconds so that any incoming missile or plane dropping would be confused as to where the target was.
Wow, so it was like a really slow frequency hopping scheme.
That's exactly what it was.
Wow, manually.
Wow, that's amazing.
By swapping out coils. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and they had all the stations that were participating had to maintain the set of tuned coils that would work on either 640 or 1240 and then be able to trigger in a sequence on and off so that the enemy planes wouldn't know where to bomb.
Very interesting.
Fascinating.
Well, thank you very much for the information, caller.
Okay, you guys have the best show that there is.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're pleased to hear it. And, of course...
If
you agree with that caller, help keep us alive, keep us on the air.
Even if you think we're merely good,
Even if you think we're mediocre, call 1-212-209-2950 and support Off the Hook, or go to give2 wbai.org and support Off the Hook, because that is all that can keep us alive over here. We have a little bit of time left. Going to try and sneak in a couple of more phone calls if we can. Very good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I'd like to say...
Tom.
Hello?
Is it Tom from the Bronx?
Yes, it is.
Hello.
I'd like to say that some time ago I wrote the FCC, and I had said that there are a lot of blind people that have been... lost the ability to have TV on their TV radios that do not work anymore. And I said, why not take, to make it inexpensive, why not take a radio station that may be faltering a bit and to try to have X amount of TV shows per day put on the station? In other words, and it would draw advertising. In other words,
you mean on the old analog TV frequencies? Is that what you mean?
Right on the radio, right over the radio.
Oh, you mean put TV programming over the radio? Yeah, used to be able to listen to Channel 6 on like 88.1 megahertz or something, or 88.7. But yeah, actually, that would be a good idea.
In other words, there's people that are blind and they've been cut off from it.
Yeah.
If they don't have enough money.
You can't buy a radio. You used to be able to buy radios that would tune to the audio subcarrier of TV stations.
Yeah, but
you can't anymore. Since digital TV came out, I have not seen a single radio that let you tune TV audio. It's really a shame.
But and that's
anyway,
missed.
I wrote to them. And they wrote me back, and they said they gave it a number, and that's they launched the missile up, and they've got it going around the world, but nothing has ever been done with it.
Okay.
Well, keep calling the FCC.
Absolutely. And on that note, I'm going to say good night. Thank you very much, caller Tom from the Bronx. Always nice hearing from him. I'd like to thank our guests, Sandra Ordonez from openitp.org, Bicycle Mark over there in Europe land, Emmanuel was technically a guest today. Thank you guys here in the studio. Send us email, oth@2600.com. Support our show. Even if we're not live broadcasting, you can still support us by calling 212-209-2950 or give the numeral 2 WBAI.org and supporting Off the Hook. This is Rob T. Firefly for Off the Hook saying good night. Good night.
genocide is still happening in Darfur, Sudan. Join Brooklyn for Peace and Columbia University visiting scholar Ahmed H. Adam to learn about the continuing horror in Darfur. For more information about this Brooklyn for Peace Darfur Africa event, visit brooklynpeace.org. That's Monday, May 19th in Brooklyn.
Hi, this is Alec Baldwin, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York. Anything can happen. Support WBAI, Peace and Justice Radio in New York.
Everybody, welcome to a very special Fun Drive program. I'm Christine Blasdale, and that beautiful voice you just heard is my dear friend Candy Kane. And the song is, of course, called Coming Out Swinging. And we are coming out swinging in this show, bringing you some very, very great information and bringing back a thank you gift pack that I think is just so really important for our lives. I am myself a tried and true participant in this wonderful pack. I've been using these products for quite some time now, and I'm feeling fantastic and really love the effects. And we offered these items in one of our past fund drives, and the response was so overwhelming, we decided to have the wonderful proprietor of that operation, Mr. Reno Rollet, come back and to talk to you about Boku Superfoods. Hello, Reno.
Hey, Christine. How are you?
I am very good. Did you like that music? Did you like
I
that opening
it.
Little
I love
coming
it.
Out swinging? Because
yeah.
This is what this superfood, you know, revolution is all about. I want for those listeners who are not familiar with Boku Superfoods, and there's probably quite a few. We have, you know, our signal is quite large, and we have a lot of listeners. And I love the products. I love them very, very much. But I want to get our listeners a sort of a Reader's Digest version of what these are. What we're offering is a pack that is. We have a new product from you that we're going to be introducing for the very first time, but we're bringing back the Boku Superfoods, the one-month supply, and the one-month supply of the Boku Super Protein. And I want you, if you can, just let our listeners know what's in the superfoods, what makes it so great.
Okay, well, what makes Boku Superfoods so great? We have a line of industry-leading superfood concentrates. These are powdered foods. They're the most nutrient-dense, health-forming plant-based foods from all over the world. So our flagship product is Boku Superfood. It's a blend of 60 ingredients. These are fruits and vegetables from the land, from the sea. There's even a proprietary blend of 14 very potent medicinal mushrooms. So this is vitamins, minerals, probiotics, antioxidants. It's a flood of incredibly powerful fuel for human existence. So these are delicious powders. You drop them in a shaker or in a blender, and you mix them with your favorite liquid. You drop them down, and you're good to go. So the superfood, that would be our green blend, our
yes.
green concentrate. Then we have our protein. By the way, everything we do at Boku International is USDA certified organic, kosher, and vegan. So everything's gluten-free, dairy-free, wheat-free. These are, again, the most pristine, highest quality ingredients sourced from all over the world. So we have a protein as well, which is the second product you mentioned in the kit. And our protein is a triple vegan sourced protein. So the protein is derived from three vegan sources, primarily sprouted brown rice, red dulse, which is a beautiful plant from the ocean, and cranberry. So and then we add a few other really super potent ingredients as well. But the key to the protein is that it's got an amino acid profile that's actually designed to emulate or replicate human breast milk.
Mm.
It's in the cells within minutes. There are basically no digestive issues, no bloating, no gas. It tastes amazing. It's not grainy. It's really, you know, like all of our products, not to brag, but just absolutely incredible. And we believe it's the best protein powder on the market. And let's see, what else is in a kit? You've got our immune tonic.
Yes, the Boku Immune Tonic Spray.
Boku Immune Tonic Spray, which is your best little buddy to carry around with you if you're traveling, certainly during this season. It's a sublingual spray. It contains a blend of super, super potent medicinal herbs. You just spray it under your tongue. It's in a glycerin base. And this, again, is right in your cells, and it's super fuel for immunity. And so this is the kind of thing you want to take with you when you're traveling, again, this time of year when you got bugs flying around in the air and germs and that kind of thing. And, you know, it just really helps to supercharge your immunity. And then finally, we have our brand new immune candle.
Yes.
Which is just so amazing. I'm so incredibly proud of this product. It was actually conceived by my son, Reno Jr. There's a fantastic story about how this all happened. I'm not sure if you want to get into that now. But it's a candle that is infused with potent essential oils, all organic essential oils. The candle is actually made from organic coconut wax, not soy, not beeswax, certainly not paraffin.
Coconut wax.
Coconut wax.
I've never heard of a candle made of coconut wax.
You know, there aren't many out there. And it's just beautiful. It's just amazing, if you can imagine, beautiful, pure, organic coconut wax infused with all these amazing organic essential oils. So it creates this essence of like a really luxurious, beautiful, well-rounded Vicks VapoRub.
It's way better than that.
Yeah, no. It's very eucalyptus forward, you know.
There's eucalyptus, but there's also, you have what, rosemary?
We have rosemary, we have lemon, we have tea, we have just a blend of
peppermint.
Really, we have peppermint. And it's just really delicious. It's incredible, the smell.
The smell is really good, but what is the purpose? Is it just to light up your room and make your room like all smell good?
You know, the candle is inspired by the legend of the four thieves. So it goes back 700 years to the 15th century, and there's an amazing story of the four thieves, these thieves that roamed the countryside in Europe and actually robbed plague victims. And they did it without catching the dreaded disease. So when they were finally captured in Marseille, the magistrate offered leniency in exchange for the secret to how these thieves were able to rob these plague victims and not get sick. So it was disclosed that these thieves were perfumers and spice traders. And what they did was they doused their clothing and rubbed their skin with this secret blend of essential oils. And this is what provided them the immunity. So they were able to go into these homes with these people, you know, stricken with this highly contagious disease and not get sick. So this story has been around for hundreds of years, and we didn't actually even find out about the thieves oil story until after my son came up with the idea. But certainly that was the inspiration for the Boku Immune Candle. We use some of the same potent essential oils, and we were actually astonished to learn that there was a recent university study conducted over in Great Britain where scientists burned these essential oils in a controlled environment and were nearly 100% effective against killing airborne pathogens. So we don't make claims, but the idea is that these essential oils absolutely have these beneficial antimicrobial properties. And the idea is that you burn this candle and create a beautiful space where the essence of these potent essential oils fill the air. You have a sense of beautiful, calming wellness. And, you know, hey, there's a reason we call it the immune candle.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe it's something that a lot of people are really going to love. In fact, the people that have experienced the candle,
I have.
Yes,
I have, and I'm very, very happy to say that I actually, Reno brought me my very own. This is like one of the first ones out of the line, right? This is, I get one of the very, very first ones, and I'm very, very happy about that.
You have the very first one.
I have
one.
The first one? Yeah, I'm going to stamp it.
The very first immune candle.
I want you
just
to sign
off the
it. Folks, if you're just joining me, I'm Christine Blosdell, and I'm joined in studio from with the proprietor of Boku Superfoods, Reno Rollet, and we are talking about this great, great line of superfoods and immune boosting products that we want to get to you, the listeners. I put it together We offered this before, the Boku, the Super Pack. We offered it before, Reno, with a 30-day supply of the Boku Superfoods, the 30-day supply of the Boku, the Super Protein Powder, and also we had the bottle of the Boku Immune Spray.
Yeah.
And we had also included, it was kind of like a free add-on, the shaker bottle, the Boku shaker bottle, so that people don't even have to worry. All you got to do is you just put your powders in there, you mix it with your favorite, you know, some people like rice milk or almond milk. I like a nice organic apple juice or something like that.
I'm orange juice, pure water,
yes.
any liquid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the shaker, that was kind of our last run with this. We did that. That was the original pack, and that was for a $200 pledge. Now, since, you know, I'm so very excited about this, and I want to get this into as many people's hands as possible, and we need to raise a lot of money this hour. We need to raise $5,000. What we did, what I did, but they created it, and I just put this pack together. We're going to do something called the Boku Super Immune Super Pack.
Love it.
So we're going to have all those items, but we're also going to include, okay, two of the Boku Immune candles.
Nice.
For a $200 pledge. Okay?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's fantastic.
And for those people who have already pledged for the Boku, the superfoods, and they are fine with that, we have something called the Boku Super Immune Mini Pack. And the mini pack is just going to be the two Boku Immune candles and the Boku Immune Tonic Spray.
Oh, perfect.
So if you don't want any of the superfoods and you just want to work on your immune system, it's flu season, folks. The people are getting flu shots. They're offering flu shots at some airports now. Anytime you go into a convenience store, it's like, let's shoot you up. You know, let's get this is a great, great deal. That mini pack is a $100 contribution. The super pack is a $200 contribution. And if you want to get on the phone, folks, right now, and I encourage you to do this now before it gets very busy, this show is going to be very, very busy. The phone lines are going to be blowing up. So please call right now. You can pledge at the $100 level and get the mini pack, the immune mini pack, or pledge $200 and get the immune super pack. And that's, again, the candles, the immune tonic spray, the superfoods, which are so delicious and so nutritious. It's dense nutrition, super nutrient-dense nutrition. And it also includes the protein powder. That's $200. Okay, you can use your Visa, American Express, MasterCard. I need to get at least 25 people getting the super pack with all those goodies. We're talking 6 with the two candles. That's like 6 items for a $200 contribution. And the number to call is 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. If you've been listening to these fun drives and you've been hearing about the Boku pack that we originally had, which was a $200 contribution, you already know that that was a lot of incredible products that are packed together with a 30-day supply of the superfood and the super protein, plus the spray, plus the shaker bottle. But if you call up right now for that same amount, that same pledge amount, $200, we're going to throw in something extra. You're going to get all those goodies, plus the brand new 2 Boku Immune Candles. Again, the number to call is 212-209-2950. Remember, folks, too, that this retails for well over $255, but you're getting it for a $200 contribution, plus you're helping this amazing radio station stay on the air that brings you the best in health and wellness, in spirituality, in public affairs, in music, in news, information you're never going to find anywhere else. For $200, you get all of that. You want to call up that number, and you want to ask the phone answers for the Boku Super Immune Pack? For a $200 contribution, 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. I want you just to kind of we want to go back to the superfood and the super protein. These are not only, we know that they are organic, certified organic.
Yep.
They're wheat-free.
Wheat-free.
Gluten-free.
Gluten-free.
Soy and dairy-free.
Absolutely.
And non-GMO.
Everything non-GMO. These are the most pristine, highest quality, health-forming, nutrient-dense superfoods on the planet. We take the quality of these ingredients incredibly seriously. But beyond that, Christine, I think it's important to point out one other item that sort of separates Boku from perhaps other superfood products out on the market. There's a lot of great products out on the market.